Good morning. Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my pleasure to serve this loving, courageous congregation. Everyone is welcome here. You're welcome here if this is your very first time. If you've been coming for 10 years, you're welcome if you walked in, if you rolled in, if you ran in. Everyone is welcome. You're welcome no matter who you love, where your family is from, how much money you make, or how you express your gender. You are welcome whether you feel courageous this morning or whether you feel lucky just to be getting by. And you are welcome whether your heart is joyful or sad this morning. Everyone is welcome because you are a beloved child of the universe, and you are precious and worthy. So masking is optional right now while we're in low risk for COVID. Afterwards, we have coffee hour downstairs and online. So please welcome, if you're new here today, welcome. And we'd love for you to fill out the information. There's information cards on the back of your seat and to join us. I forgot one announcement. And that announcement is, you might have heard there's an election. I don't know, might have come up for you. Our congregation is sporting major 114. And there's going to be a sign-making workshop downstairs after the service to make signs. And then we're going to hold signs up at Garden Home the next two Fridays. And there'll be more information in the e-blast and other places to find out about that. But if you want to make signs afterwards, please go downstairs and do it. So our chalice lighting this morning is from Betts Winicky. May this flame, symbol of transformation since time began, fire our curiosity, strengthen our wills, and sustain our courage as we seek what is good within us and around us. And now we will say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors.
Good morning again. I'm Salima Malson. My pronouns are she and her, and I'm one of the worship team's lay leaders. This morning, it's my joy to share these opening words titled Giving Each Other Courage by the Reverend Gretchen Haley with permission from Soul Matters. Come in, all who long to know how to love this world, how to keep eyes open, hands unclenched, arms wide, breathing deeply in and out. This is the time to practice, because there is still so much good and beauty and joy. But it can be hard to keep feeling this tale with all the news and the wind and the rain and the trembling earth. Who wants to love this life anyway? Come in, all who teeter on the edge of cynicism, broken-hearted and trying still to remember laughter and kindness. And the chance to be alive in these days when so much is at stake. In this place, we remind each other why we persist, giving each other courage to take this path that is not always easy, to keep practicing this love that cannot, will not let go, and still calls us on. Come, let us worship together.
We are now blessed this morning to have a new member dedication. We are inviting four people to become new members today, and I think three of them are here. Maybe four. I'm not seeing. In Unitarian Universalism, the most important moment of commitment is joining the congregation as a member, which is what we're doing this morning. In many faiths, the moment of commitment is conversion or acceptance of doctrines of the faith. In Unitarian Universalism is not a doctrinal faith. We do not ask those in our congregation to believe any specific thing. Instead, we ask for something more difficult. We ask for members to covenant with one another. We are a covenantal faith. This is what being a member of a Unitarian Universalist congregation means: to covenant to walk together and to restore covenant when it is broken. We covenant by affirming and promoting the values of Unitarian Universalism, as expressed in our principles, and can be summarized, our principles can be summarized basically as the worth and dignity of each person and supporting the interdependent web of life. We also covenant with other people from WOLF. The purpose of this covenant is to build intentional, beloved community. So we learn how to do that here, and then we take beloved community into the world wherever we go. So I would like to invite those who are joining today to come forward: Virginia Ives, Ashley Omer, Gail Ryder, and Bill McGee.
Now is the time in our service when we take a few minutes to consider what it is that we have to be grateful for and what it is that we have to give. Our mission states that we are here to plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, and bloom in service to the wider world. Now, while it's true that we need money to operate and maintain a physical place where we can do these things, where we can plant seeds of inspiration, we need more than that when it comes to growing compassionate community and serving those beyond ourselves. We need willing hands. We need willing hands to weed and rake and haul wood chips and to make coffee and to tend to the little ones in our congregation. We need all these things, and we need someone to bring a meal when someone is recovering from COVID or has had an unexpected encounter with a hospital. This is what beloved community is about. And so we give in the ways that we can give. I just read something by Anne Frank this morning that said simply, you can always give something, even if it's only kindness. Now, in my mind, gratitude and giving are kind of an infinity loop. And on the third Sunday of each month, we as a congregation, we get to practice gratitude by giving. When we donate the basket, our entire collection basket, and the monies received online to needs beyond our own. Today marks the start of our final quarter, and we are asking that when the basket is passed during our musical interlude, or if you're watching from home, that you donate generously to Puerto Rico's Solidarity Brigade of the West. Now, in mid-September, Hurricane Fiona devastated Puerto Rico, which has never fully recovered from the horrific Hurricane Maria 5 years ago. Fiona landed in the western part of the island, which is less developed and farther from the capital, consequently receiving far less attention and practically no aid. Now, it was after Maria's destruction that the Solidarity Brigade of the West organized to help these rural communities, not only responding to the immediate crisis, but offering continuing support. Let's join them this morning in their generosity of spirit as we speak together our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Joy and happiness is what we most want for ourselves and the people in our lives and communities. Our hearts are made to love. And the world is so incredibly beautiful. So together we hold the celebrations of the joys and wonders of our lives. Pain also comes into every life. Each of us suffers loss, defeat, illness, and tragedy. And maybe that's true for you today. We may also just feel pain because we have fallen short of our values and aspirations. We did things we wished we had not done, and we did not do things we wished we had. This is also common in human experience, and maybe it's true for you right now. So together we hold a circle of compassion wide enough to hold all of this pain and disappointment, as well as all the joys of our lives. Today, we're going to have a silent reflection, and after that, we're going to sing How Can Anyone? Betsy will start playing it, and the words will be on the screen. As we begin to sing the hymn after the silence, if you are called to, please come forward and place a stone in the water. The water represents all the circles of compassion and celebration that this community holds in love. If you are on live stream, I offer you to do your joy and sorrow in your chat. If you're at home on the recording, place your hands over your heart and say your joys and sorrows into the room. We begin with these words by Mary Oliver.
When I am among the trees, when I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call again. "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine." And these words from Audre Lorde. Next time, ask, what's the worst that will happen? Then push yourself a little further than you dare. Once you start to speak, people will yell at you. They will interrupt you, put you down, and suggest it's personal. And the world won't end. And the speaking will get easier and easier. and you will find that you have fallen in love with your own vision, which you may never have realized you had. And you will lose some friends and lovers and realize you don't miss them. And new ones will find you and cherish you. And at last, you'll know with surpassing certainty that only one thing is more frightening than speaking your truth. And that is not speaking it.
Three ships heard the distress signal. The first one was just 7 miles away and could see the sinking ship. But they had a cargo of illegal seals. To go to the rescue would mean possibly getting caught. They were afraid. They did not go. The second ship was 14 miles away, but it was night, and they were surrounded by ice. They were afraid. They did not go. The third ship was 58 miles away and moving in the opposite direction. They heard the distress signal. With hardly a pause, the captain ordered the ship to turn around. It was hard going through the ice and the dark, and it was incredibly uncomfortable and sometimes terrifying. But they reached the sinking ship, and they saved 705 people off of the drowning Titanic. Our theme this month is courage. And courage is the ability to do something that frightens you. It is being able to feel the fear, the resistance, the desire to flee or disappear, but also something else. Something more important, a value, perhaps your own soul, something greater than yourself that pushes you across the fear and into the unknown. Writer and researcher Brené Brown has studied courage, and she says this about courage. I always ask a very simple question to people. I just say, think of the last time you did something that you thought was really brave, or the last time you saw someone do something brave. And I can tell you as a researcher, with 11,000 pieces of data, that I cannot find a single example of courage, moral courage, spiritual courage, leadership courage, relational courage. I cannot find a single example of courage that was not born completely of vulnerability. We buy into some mythology about vulnerability being weakness and being gullibility and being frailty because it gives us permission not to do it. So I saw a movie once. I barely remember it. But the main character was married to a man who was very prickly. How do you love a porcupine? She was asked. Very carefully, she said. And I've always held that image for some instance of two porcupines together showing each other that soft underbelly where they could really be hurt. And that to me is the image of vulnerability. Brown defines it as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. In other words, it means allowing ourselves to be seen in all our wonder and all our imperfection, in all of our needs, in all of our yearnings. Vulnerability means exposing ourselves to embarrassment, discomfort, or rejection. And aren't those the absolute worst? Being vulnerable means allowing other people to judge who you are, the most important things about you. It can feel like our very ability to belong can be threatened. And all of us want to belong. We want to be loved. Belonging is absolutely essential to our well-being. We evolved in tribes, after all. We need other people. And that is one of the great challenges of being human. We need others. We need connection to flourish and be healthy. But to truly belong to someone else means connecting with them. And the only way to really connect is to show others who we truly are, who we love, what brings us joy and what makes us laugh and what makes us afraid or sad or weak or unsure. But showing ourselves can mean that people might not like us or will judge us as wrong or incompetent or decide in other ways that we are unworthy of belonging with them. It's a twisting catch-22. We need connection and belonging. To connect and belong, we need to be seen, but we may not want to be seen because we are worried that who we are really isn't worthy enough. So we try to fit in. We try to be like the people around us so they will accept us. True belonging, though, real connections, means saying, this is who I am. For true belonging, you have to be vulnerable. We have to put ourselves out there. We have to be courageous. What does that look like? It means asking for help when we need it, requesting what brings us pleasure or joy, disagreeing with everyone else at the meeting, admitting you don't remember as well as you once did, making a mistake, and having to tell someone. Today's Time for All Ages had many examples of vulnerability, apologizing, forgiving, speaking up, saying no, sharing our gifts, and even being kind. Our lives offer many chances to show up in the truth of our experience and our needs and our gifts. But we also get the choice not to show up. We can numb ourselves from our feelings and from other people and the world. We can hide. We can put on masks. Not literal masks, but the more psychological masks. But the real masks, too, if you want. And we just try to fit in the best we can. The problem is that if we turn away from our true selves in order to be accepted, we cut off our chances for real connection, belonging, and love. Courage is the only way through this catch-22. Leading with our deepest heart and values and saying, this is who I am, and this is what is happening in my life. Courage means accepting the risk that someone might reject us. Ash Beckman, who is the author of Step Up, The Courage to Become an Everyday Leader, says, we are all hiding something. Let's find the courage to open up. She says, each of us lives in some kind of closet, hiding something that feels painful or shameful to share. What a closet actually is, says Beckman, is a hard conversation. Because those conversations are difficult. They are risky and uncertain, whatever they are about. Telling people you're gay or trans or queer, that you lost your job or failed out of college or got arrested or are getting divorced or no longer speaking with your child or admitting you're so depressed you haven't got out of bed for 2 days. Or maybe you go to a UU congregation with humanist roots and you're actually Christian or theist or pray or speak to God, and it seems too risky to let anyone know. Or maybe you feel the pain of racial justice in our world, but you don't really want to get involved because someone might call you out. We all know it could happen. It will happen. And that at that moment, you'll feel uneducated or unsensitive and embarrassed. It's too much. Or maybe you get a really great idea, but everyone else seems so sure about their ideas for the same situation that you feel like maybe really your idea isn't worth mentioning. There are so many closets to live inside, so many ways to feel vulnerable, so many ways to feel shame. So what gives us this courage to do or say the things we are afraid of? Why do some people summon courage more easily than others? According to Brené Brown, what gives us courage is believing that we are enough. It is knowing that we are worthy of love. Which sounds so simple, and it really is simple. It means taking our worthiness out of the hands of other flawed human beings and placing it within our own deepest being, or within the vast, miraculous web of life, or in the hands of God. It is simple, but it is also incredibly difficult. We swim in a culture that wants us to know that we are not enough. Our culture is grounded in the idea that some people and ways of being are normal, and other people and ways of being are deviants of normal. Normal is good and worthy. Deviance can be okay, tolerated, or perhaps not. Our very language is arranged around this idea of some people being normal. When we write a sentence about a person, it is assumed that the person is a white, heterosexual, cis male. We must identify a person as Black or Latinx so people will know who we mean. But we never do this if someone is white. White is assumed. Black must be named. This is also true if the person is a woman. If we talk about a police officer, everyone assumes the police officer is white and male. We don't say, ever, white male policeman. People would find these words redundant. They would cross them out in an edit. Believe me, I know. I've seen it. But we must really actually identify if they're not white and male by saying the Latinx female officer. In our very language, we are clear what kind of human is normative. Living in a culture that defines particular ways of being normal and makes the majority some derivative of that causes many people to feel like they are not enough. They are different. They are strange. They are unusual. They must struggle to prove intellectually, economically, behaviorally that they are as good as whatever is considered normal. Sometimes the culture labels as dangerous and then is dangerous for those considered too outside what is considered normal. The murders of Black trans women are steady and horrific. We also live in a capitalistic consumer culture which thrives and profits on our fear that we are not enough. The media showers us with messages, and not just in advertisements, that we must have the right car, house, clothes, job, face, body, vacations, exercise plans in order to be correct, to be okay, to be enough, to be worthy. Having all that right stuff and status doesn't actually make us feel like we are enough. We all know this. We either feel that way or we don't. But capitalist consumer culture works at us all the time and keeps us running after approval. It changes what we need accepted, to be accepted, as fashions and trends morph. There's a member of my family who changes their furniture every 5 years so that it's the most fashionable. I didn't even know that was a thing. It makes us afraid. The culture makes us afraid that our bodies aren't right. And it sells us things or services that will fix us or tells us what is important about being human is stuff or experiences that you really have to buy. Our culture rails in so many ways to tell us all that we are not enough. That means feeling like we're worthy and enough is an absolutely radical act. It's a courageous act. It's a vulnerable act. And if you want to transform the world we live in, it's one of the most radical things that you can do. Knowing we are enough, according to Brown, also means being able to say, I've had enough. We can put boundaries on hurtful behavior. We can create and change laws that don't work. We've had enough because we are enough. And we each deserve to live in a world that treats every person, us and every other person, as if they are worthy. Knowing we are enough also means being able to show up, take risks, and let ourselves be seen. We can show up every day with courage, letting ourselves be seen. We can ask for help. We can say we don't know. We can listen to someone and allow ourselves to be changed by them. We can try something new or share something we love or let ourselves experience joy and pleasure. When we know ourselves to be enough, it still takes a lot of courage to show up and be seen. It can still be scary or uncomfortable or embarrassing. There's actually no way out. As Brené Brown says, you can choose courage or you can choose comfort. You can't have both. Acting courageously almost always feels like stomach butterflies or a tight chest or a closed throat or a headache or a desperate urge to run or crawl under the covers or table or have a stiff drink, whatever your version of facing discomfort or fear looks like. Yesterday, over 25 of us, and I was so delighted, showed up to participate in a workshop with local writer and activist Bruce Poncetta on using your privilege to empower others. He was coaching us on ways we could show up for racial justice. And part of that he talked about was uncomfortable conversations. And he said at one point, even if your voice cracks, say what you need to say. That is courage. That is vulnerability. I remember when I broke my wrist, and some of you might remember that too, so many of you generously brought me food and cut up vegetables, because it was my right hand, of course. I really didn't want to ask for that help. I remember feeling embarrassed that I couldn't manage. I thought of ways I could manage, even though that meant pushing myself physically and energetically and financially past really what was a reasonably good idea. And then I remember thinking, oh, yeah, hey, Tracy, minister lady, isn't asking for help one way we connect for others? Isn't that showing vulnerability a way to show people that they love for us? Haven't I preached about this? Shouldn't I model this? So after a bit of talking to myself, I said, yes, I do need help. And it was uncomfortable at first, but it also just turned out to be fine and loving and really delicious. So we are all on journeys to truly belong to ourselves and each other. Knowing we are worthy of love and care and joy and pleasure is not something we either have or don't have. It's something we cultivate. We can grow our sense of worthiness by experiencing joy, by slowing down, by loosening our bones and letting go. Feeling ourselves shine and being grateful. We can feel through meditation and prayer or being in the woods or whatever connects you to whatever is greater than yourself, humanity or the natural world or God. Having courage is something that we practice as well. It's not something we're able to do or unable to do based on our character or how much counseling we had. It's something that we have to try over and over again. And sometimes it will be easier to leap into that own unknown, scary place, and sometimes it won't feel possible at all. But we can just try again. But as Audre Lorde reminds us in this morning's reading, it does get easier and easier. And as she said, at last you'll know with surpassing certainty that only one thing is more frightening than speaking your truth, and that is not speaking it. Long ago, three ships heard the distress calls of the Titanic. One was too fearful that they would be discovered for who they were. One was too afraid for their safety. One ship, one captain, was able to cross the vast fear of the night and ice and live up to their, his, higher value, to help people in distress. Because being courageous saves lives. Very often it's our own, but it's also other people's. So let us be a courageous people together. Let us be a place where each person can experience their worthiness and show themselves as they are. Let's grow in love. Let's know that this rose will open. So the truth is, we can do hard things. And I extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they still stay with you until we meet again.